Hi, this is Pep Phelan from the Poach Centre. I have with me today Ricky Mentha. Hi, Ricky.
Hey, Pep, how are you?
I'm good. It's so good to see you.
You too, sister.
So, Ricky, tell me more about yourself, where you're from, what you're up to, your profession, and your pathway to get there.
I'm originally from down Victoria. I'm a Kurnai man from Latrobe Valley, which is East Gippsland. Down the Lakes Entrance area, Latrobe Valley. So that's the area I grew up in, and I'm currently back at the moment. I have spent predominantly most of my life up in Central Australia, in Alice Springs, from about 15 years old till last year, and I'm like 43 years old now. So I spent predominantly a large chunk of my life in Central Australia, living with the Aranda people, working up there. Got into health and in around 1997 from community development background. And I've been doing clinical work in the health industry. Chronic disease is a big area of my area of focus that I've done a lot of work in, because I understand that the chronic disease impacts at the population level for our people. The kidney disease, diabetes, respiratory illness, and heart diseases. The key things that are my key areas of interest.
And what are you currently up to at the moment?
So I started off as an Aboriginal health worker in 1997 in the renal unit in Alice Springs. And I was dialysing Indigenous patients, and seeing the amount of people on dialysis, the Indigenous people, was a big eye-opener for me. And what was driving that? So, that's what I thought. I might be able to contribute something here and understand a little bit more about what's going on at an illness level for our people in Central Australia. So, yeah. So now what I'm up to is, post the Poach Indigenous Leadership activities I was involved in last year, we went to London, come back to Australia and have personally and professionally evolved.
Yep.
Now I'm doing higher level work now with Academic Health Science Network from Central Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And basically we can tap into MRFF money with huge collaborations from partner organisations like Menzies, Central Australian Aboriginal Congress, AMSAN, all these peak leadership bodies around Aboriginal health that I have a seat at the table with at the moment, and involved with planning research and health service delivery for people in the Northern Territory.
You've actually got quite a few research papers under your belt. So can you tell me about any of that area that you've done some research in?
Yeah, so they're quite varied. So I started off, in research, and one of the first projects I was involved in was some heart disease and depression amongst Aboriginal men.
Mm-hmm.
And we recruited some people in Central Australia with a gentleman by the name of Alex Brown, who's a mentor, a leader, who got me into this space a little bit upstream from, the clinical service delivery to policy, looking at research and evidence-based policy information that can change the settings and whatnot, so in the landscape. Fascinating journey that I've been on, and been very privileged to be on this journey. Then I was involved with heart failure in Central Australia amongst the about 500 people there. And that was called the Heart of the Heart Study.
Mm-hmm.
And we recruited 500 women and men and children. We screened for heart disease, which is a large study. I wrote a paper on that, and no intervention, but was just, measuring the incidence and prevalence of disease. Intervention studies I've been involved in were the Central Australian Heart Protection Study. That project basically had an intervention in it where we compared two groups. So one got an intervention and the other never. And basically it was a nurse-led intervention post-heart attacks, someone having acute coronary syndrome. And we would do a cardiac rehabilitation model of care, which was nurse-led outreach model, to people's homes, and delivering a whole bunch of education with rehabilitation emphasis on it, and around exercise, activity, medications, educating people around how to reduce someone having another heart event or it progressing into something more sinister.
Yeah.
So that was a real interesting study, and it proved to show that the intervention group basically lived three times more than the standard care that people are getting right now. So that model of care showed really effectiveness by three times, reduced death rates. We measured MACE, which is major adverse coronary events. Fascinating stuff. So that was a really privileged project that I've been involved in, where people were having impacts and doing interventions with individuals, and they were really grateful of that, and not getting that, you know, as standard care was something we've seen can improve service delivery there. So that could be potentially scaled up, and we've got a paper that's coming out maybe this year or next year that's going to, you know, show the evidence behind that project. So that was a really good project that I was really happy to be involved in. I've been involved just recently with the Next Generation study. We got $5 million to look at youth, Aboriginal youth and wellbeing, and the influences and the enablers and the barriers to care for young people to become fully developed young Indigenous people, to try and reduce the death and despair that our people have experienced, you know, with other generations. So that's a fascinating study. It's still ongoing. That was a national study recruited in Central Australia, recruited in three sites, one in New South Wales and then another one in Perth. Mm-hmm. So that's still going. And we're still putting that together, the results of that. And so that'll be written up in a few years. And that was with Sandra Eads, collaborating with her group. And she's a fantastic Indigenous leader who's taken up a leadership role over at Curtin University now. I think she's a Dean of Medicine. Mm-hmm. So the first Indigenous Dean of Medicine.
She's incredible.
Much love to that lady. And she's a friend and, you know, a colleague and someone who, you know, is a huge mentor and inspiration to me. And I've been so privileged to, you know, receive some of their glitter.
Absolutely. That's a really good point you bring up, Ricky, because I would love to know who are some other Indigenous or non-Indigenous people that you really look up to?
Well, I've got Indigenous leadership, Indigenous people that I look up to in sporting arenas, you know, the footballers, the boxers, like Uncle Lionel Rose, my first Indigenous world champion boxer. He's someone who's really inspired me with physical and emotional sort of resilience to just keep going and having a go. Even though you may be out of your depth.
Yeah.
So, you know, Uncle Lionel was a huge one for me in the sporting arena. I suppose academically there's Alex Browns and Nyries and, you know, Sandra Eads and Sean, who we both know quite well.
Yeah, Professor Sean Ewing.
Professor Sean Ewing. Leadership like that is very inspiring, and it gives you more wind in the sails to keep going, you know, and fighting those small fights on the ground, because we know we're contributing to the bigger picture, and where we've got leadership there at the forefront and we're contributing on the ground to some of their movements, and they recognize that, you know, that you are contributing on the ground to their constructs of understandings, the world that they're living in and our position in society and where we're moving as a people is phenomenal. And, you know, whether we want to integrate, hold on to our culture, where are we going as a nation or a sub-nation within a nation, we haven't even had those conversations yet. So, you know, it's quite exciting times to see the Indigenous leadership that I look up to now, my mentors, indirectly inspiring me.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it takes time for it to come together for you to really understand it.
What motivates you to be your very best every day?
I have to say I want to make my mum proud. You know? It's mum's passed now, but I want to make her proud. We all get a certain amount of time, and it's what you do with it, sister.
Yeah.
It's how you use your time constructively, contribute to, you know, some bigger stuff that's bigger than you.
Yep.
But also holding on to your values and your principles.
Yeah.
And so what motivates me is, you know, my mum and my ancestors, but also the generation of kids are going to come behind me and say, he did something worthwhile while he lived.
Yeah.
So that's what really drives me every day.
Yeah, brilliant. What have you learned about influence, impact and leadership from the work that you do and the people that you engage with?
Wow, that's a huge question. What I've learned is that this stuff comes naturally, and for a group of people to be put into a room, a bunch of people with like-minded minds that have an agenda or a goal to set something and to make some change that they want to see implemented by building an evidence base to back their views, right? It's a fascinating space because it's projecting things, it's having foresight into something that you want changed, but you need to go through a process to build an evidence base to show that, right?
Yeah.
So once you've got that evidence base and you push yourself and that like-minded group of people, who are trying to influence change, building an evidence base, getting to that point and then making change and influencing that change, it's incremental. It's something that has to be built in a group. It can't be just done out of the blue. It takes a group of people with passion, with insight, with drive and vision and the right methodology to enable a conversation like that to happen much broader than that group.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's fascinating space that it's something that can start small, but then can have a massive effect at a population level and enough people buy into those ideas. Things can change.
What does Indigenous leadership mean to you? And what do non-Indigenous colleagues, friends and peers have to learn about ways of knowing, doing and being from their Indigenous colleagues?
It's hard, but it's simple, right? Indigenous leadership to me is listening to elders, walking with people, not in front of people, right? Not following someone else. It's walking with someone, beside someone. So we're all going to the same destination, right? So it's that, and it's listening to your elders and those that have been around before and being respectful of others, other people's views, right? From an external perspective, Indigenous people don't always feel as if our leadership is heard, respected or listened to and our insights. But doesn't mean we don't have a go.
Do you call yourself an Aboriginal health worker or a researcher, Aboriginal health researcher?
I don't even know what to call myself anymore.
Okay.
You know, because the roles evolve and change, you know, yeah. And I don't know what to call myself. Like, yeah, I'm a researcher. I think I'm more of a collaborator, you know, and like to be involved in ideas that I think are going to have an impact and to make things a little bit better for our people, you know.
Yeah.
I'm labelled as an Indigenous research fellow, but, you know, it's a label. And everybody wears labels, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just a class of where I'm getting paid in an institution.
Yeah.
But my job is much more varied and much more fun than just that label.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So if you had a major influence over your profession and industry, so Indigenous research and Aboriginal health, in what ways would you change it? How would you create change and what mechanisms would you use?
That's huge.
I know.
All right, so building capacity and critical mass amongst Indigenous people. So getting more kids coming out of high school into this space, having, you know, traineeships or internships or something like this that gets them interested in Aboriginal health and Aboriginal health research and science and STEM industries, you know. If we can get more Indigenous kids into these fields, we build critical mass. We bring in, you know, people with different characters and different ideas and different. So it's about building capacity, building confidence and building critical mass. That's what I would change.
Yeah. What do you love most about your career?
I love the networking. I didn't realize how powerful networking is and, you know, growing networks of people and spheres of influence, right? I didn't realize the power of that until I was involved with this post-program, the leadership program we went on last year. And looking at leadership and networking opportunities and creating advancement, right? No man's an island. You can't do nothing on your own. When you're doing high-level work like this, it takes a group of collaborators to come together. It might be multiple institutions. It might be multiple individuals with different skill sets, different superpowers. And everybody's appreciated in that space. So I love that fact about this work is what you bring to the table, people actually appreciate it. And you might undervalue it and think you know, just a little speck of dust, but actually it might be that link to someone else's insight that they were looking for.
What frustrates you about being an Aboriginal person in your professional industry?
What frustrates you is we use Whitefella methods, Whitefella evidence bases and processes to build an evidence base to please the white funders for our mob because we're so restricted in, you know, and in this construct that's built around us. Our people are able to, you know, practice their languages and their cultures and this and that, but in restrictions, with huge amount of restrictions, right? And with someone always watching and looking over them. So we live in a construct where we have to play by the rules, but we don't get to make the rules.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So working within that framework and trying to make a difference for our mob is the biggest challenge.
Yeah. You spoke about networks just before. How do you engage, activate, and utilize your personal and professional networks for your career?
Really, they incidentally come along. You don't go out, plan for them, and it actually evolved naturally. And I think I'm supposed to be in this space, and I haven't been fighting it for a long time.
Yeah,
I haven't had a full plan of what I need to evolve, rub shoulders with Alex Brown. I didn't know Alex. Like we crossed paths and we built a rapport, and it took time. And so I'm really lucky that the people that I have been able to link up with, it's just been because of space and time, and I've been around and we're at that table and I got an invite, or, you know, and then you get to build rapport. And then over that rapport, people see your principles and your values and, you know, what your core values are and what drives and motivates you as an individual. And I think that is the difference, whether people decide whether they want to work with you or not.
Yeah.
Is the way you about your approaches and your insights and, you know, inclusivity of others.
If you could talk to your six-year-old self about your pathway to now, particularly around your career, what guidance or advice would you give him?
It was like, where did you go wrong? Man, as a six-year-old, like, you wanted to be a singer. How did you get into bloody doing this stuff? I love music, right? And I love singing. And I never got to do that, you know? I never got to record. But I'm in this space. So I'm making the most of what I did. And that's what I tell my six-year-old is, you know, you want to have a plan, you know what you want to do, but just be ready. Life, you may have to evolve and be a little flexible.
For any Indigenous person looking to commit to a career in the Aboriginal health space or Indigenous research, what advice or guidance would you give them?
I'd say that I'd be there for them as they go through this. If they want me as a mentor, then I'm there for them over the next 10, 15 years, because they're going to grow, they're going to evolve, they're going to be challenged. The system can be cruel and, you know, can put you in your place real quick. That if you needed a friend, that there's plenty of us out there that have been through it, that the best thing to do is have someone to talk to when you are challenged. And so offering mentorship to young people would be something I'd probably offer them. But their growth is their growth, right?
Yeah. What does allyship mean to you?
Respect. It means working with dual means, you know, in terms of outcome that we want to seek in terms of making change and implementing change, right? It's doing it in a respectful way through different cultural lenses, through political lenses. You have to have multiple insights into other people's views and processes on, and how they work. So allyship is about being respectful, but having same outcome or goal or same type of endpoint that we want to get to, that we can align ourselves and we move together and we do that together. I think it's about respect at the end of the day that underpins that, and being aware that there are differences in the world and that everyone sees, you know, or experiences the world the same way.
What are the knowledges, skill sets, and behaviours that you believe make a good ally?
Mutual respect. I think I've talked a little bit about those, but the resources as well and the sharing of resources. That might be something that I've missed out on, is use, you know, where you can bring together resources to give enough to undertake what you're trying to achieve together. And if you can combine resources, then good collaborations come from that. And, you know, that's about stewardship. So,
what do you see are the major keys to improving Indigenous health and wellbeing, both nationally and internationally?
Knowledges, Indigenous knowledges and traditional knowledges around using health and how they see the idea of health and how it affects them from their culture, but then also in a modern society, right, in terms of accessing services and making sure that there is health service accessibility to the most people in the most need, with the most remoteness of areas, that there is capability to deliver services to people, but then also to deliver stuff in messages in languages of first languages to people as well, where there is, you know, language indifference. And making sure there's cultural sensitivity, you know, for Indigenous peoples. So at a national level, I think education and retaining a culture and a sense of identity for our mob is probably the best way to go as we evolve. and learning and holding on to traditional knowledges if we can, and accessing those groups, those broader groups, to make us feel confident in who we are as a minority in this country. You know, we are a small population, so we've got a lot of work, and we are holding the shitty end of the stick, you know, for a lot of the diseases and exposure to you know, environmental factors that cause illnesses. So we've got a lot of work to do in those spaces. You know, I think there needs to be more broader investment federally into Aboriginal health dollars, and the Indigenous leadership along the way, I suppose those big institutions, the Aboriginal medical services and that, they are the ones that have the models of care that they want to deliver to their population groups. So we need to make sure that those are aligned and that they don't fall out of alignment in terms of accessing modern services, holding on to traditional stuff that helps us with our identity, but then evolving as well as the people and our kids, and investing in our kids to go to schools so they can be making money but also holding on to their identity and their cultural elements, and they can be separated. There's a place when they all come together and it's you as one, you know, and that is phenomenal. And that makes you a unique individual. That needs to be put out there a lot more to our kids. Investing in the younger people in health sciences and leadership to be able to come in as we evolve, to retain our traditional law practices and cultural knowledges and languages and everything that goes with it. But as we evolve, how those young people, where they fit in, and how can they enable and connect the people on the ground as we evolve as a nation? Yeah, it's a really difficult question. At an international level, I think that leadership is really, really important. You know, we've got crazy leaders happening in the world right now, you know, the Trumpies and, you know, these guys that are way out there, and Indigenous issues aren't really important to them because it's all about economics, and it's about, you know, moving forward and evolving and having economic stability. But there's a lot of people that miss out in that gradient of that balance, you know, with those models and governance. So we need to keep those guys in check and, you know, making sure that we enable people to have skills to fill into those positions that do oppose them and keep them in check.
What is your unique vision for Indigenous people both in Australia and around the world? What would you like to see?
I'd like to see less incarceration rates, higher education outcomes, and you know, success rates of completion of year 12s, less suicide rates, more support services for our brothers, the domestic violence that we aren't always, you know, put out there as perpetrators of sexual predators and killing our women all the time, because there's some beautiful, strong men out there that have been subjected to some horrible stuff. And we need emotional regulation, you know, for our blokes. And we need programs to help them to be strong and to understand when shit happens, they can walk away. They don't have to carry the total responsibility when everything falls apart, mm-hmm. You know. That we let our women down too much. You know, we're in jail, we don't have the opportunities. I'd love to see all of that happen for our mob. You know, that there's less suicide, youth suicide amongst our young people, the young men, that our young women respect themselves and stop having babies so young, giving themselves an opportunity to succeed. And, you know, but these are just my own little personal little qualms, but stop drinking and self-harming, you know, and live the light that God's given us to live and to fulfill our destinies, to be the best versions of ourselves, you know. That's all we want.
Ricky, thank you so much for the interview, for having a chat with me, your amazing insights and your knowledge. I really enjoy talking to you, so thank you so much.
Take care.